You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera, and you're listening to 1030 The Voice. I have a busy day today. Luckily, I have Tom behind the screen here. And stay behind the screen, Tom. Don't be trying to get after me today.
I won't. I wouldn't know what to get after you about. But,
yeah, it's still early.
I feel admonished.
Well, you know, I probably need to say sorry to you, but I won't say sorry because it's not really a sorry thing. It's something else. I'll get to that in a second. And I have Matt Moreno here of Go Easy Cats helping me get through the first hour, maybe the second hour, maybe the rest of my life.
Well, you've got a lot going on. Yes, should be interesting program today.
Yes, yes, thank you very much. Hey, at 5:40, well, because you're my 5:20, Matt Moreno, you're just here early to save me for myself. 5:40, we're going to have Glenn Posey, Sunnyside football coach. I wanted to talk to him about philosophy and coaching and kids today. After I posted that daddy ball thing yesterday, it was kind of funny. I got some yays and nays about it, so we'll talk about that. He has some stuff on his Facebook page. And I'm sure that I wonder if this might be my first question. I wonder if those hovering helicopter parents know that they're hovering helicopter parents. You have to know who you are, don't you? Some people don't, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think
you see them. You see them in recruiting.
It's probably the most prominent thing that's, you know, a part of this whole recruiting game. And I think it's something that when you talk to coaches who are now no longer in college recruiting, that it's something that whether it's parents or a guardian or just somebody else that's just around that happens to be always around and mm-hmm. always influencing and changing recruitments. And I think it's something that you see a lot. I mean, it's almost refreshing when there is a parent that isn't that way because it's just become so prominent right. throughout recruiting.
Right. No, back when I covered the team under Lute, I didn't see too many parents like that. There was a couple, two or three. But for the most part, they just watched their kids play, enjoyed how they played, and were great team parents, if that makes any sense. So 5:40, you're going to Posey. We're going to have Taylor McQuillan, the pitcher at U of A, going to come in about 6:05, talk about her career and this weekend's big game, games with Minnesota.
Ole Miss.
What did I say, Minnesota? Ole Miss, I knew that.
They're close together.
It begins with M, sounds like this. Ole Miss. Yeah, a former Moet, right?
Yep.
She used to coach there. Now she's here. Will she or won't she have any advantages? I don't know about that.
She recruited a lot of those players, so she at least knows something about them.
Oh, true. Okay, sit back on this. Hit this or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. What do you know about me that you have an advantage? Not much, right?
No.
There's no secrets.
Well, we'll find out if there's a moment where that becomes an advantage for me in any way.
But that's right. He's ready for the competition. Yeah, so hey, what's going on at the U besides this is pretty big news. It's funny though. Golf. You came up with the news just about five minutes ago.
Yeah, women's golf advanced, and they were kind of trailing for a while. I know it got put in a delay just because of weather for a while, and I went to cover, you know, baseball had their media session. They're kind of rolling right now, and then right after that, it was softball, so I kind of lost track of it for a second, and then we were, you know, right before we got on air here, I was just looking at my phone. And
guys, where's the golf tournament being played?
Arkansas. Yeah. And so,
boy, they've been having some weather in that part of the country.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so it delayed them this morning. So I kind of lost track of it, and I looked on my phone, and sure enough, they win and advance to the semis, and you know, maybe in line to make another miracle run again to the title.
Right, which would be cool, isn't it? Funny, and I've thought about this a few times this year, how the minor sports, especially the women's sports, are carrying the U of A athletic department. From golf last year, the volleyball team did very well. The women's basketball did what they did. There are other sports as well. Tennis, men's tennis, playing in a tournament. A lot of the little things are doing well. Football, basketball, not so much.
No, I had that same thought earlier today, and that was before I even knew the golf result. And I just said, man, Arizona has to be very thankful for their women's sports because a lot of them are on top of their game and rising and going in the right direction when mm-hmm. You know, maybe some of the bigger sports are a little bit stagnant and just kind of going about their business right now.
The problem with that, though, is the bigger sports that we're missing are the revenue sports. We're bringing the money to help the other teams. So, and they're the, as Greg Byrne used to say, the front porch of the program. And the front porch doesn't look too good. You don't got to paint the front porch.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens because basketball is still kind of in the news. There had been maybe an erroneous report because it might have been a fake account from Twitter. That's why I hate Twitter. Brandon Randolph had made a decision to come back. I don't think that's true yet. I don't think that an official decision has been made. I was going to say this yesterday, but I didn't because I didn't know if it was true or not. I don't think it is. So what would it mean if he did come back?
I mean, I think it would be a positive for Arizona in terms of the team. And, you know, it's another shooter, another capable scorer, someone who's, you know, been around the program and is going to be a veteran at that point. He's going to be a junior. And I think it would be a positive thing for the team. But you're over your scholarship limit right now. It means that not only would one person have to go, which is the case right now because they're one over, but two people would now have to go. Mm-hmm. And that's assuming you're taking away the scholarship from Jake Desjardins, who was on scholarship last year, which we assume is going to happen.
Yeah.
But even if you assume that and Brandon Randolph comes back, then you have to take two scholarships away. And then it becomes, well, who's going to not fit into this picture? And then, you know, that's another issue.
Right. And we're getting late into the year, which already is over, into next year when you have to figure out what you're going to do. And who could be the most successful, the one that's going to, can't even say the word, so I won't even use it. Who's going to be the one that's most suspect to do it?
Yeah, I mean, well, and then the other thing is, too, is a lot of, you know, recruits who graduate a little bit early will start coming out very, very soon.
Right, yeah.
I mean, if I remember correctly, I think DeAndre Ayton was out in, like, the end of May, mm-hmm. around this time. Yeah. So you're going to start getting the incoming class wanting to be like, well, hey, what's going on? Are you going to like take away any of our scholarships? Obviously not the five-star guys, but maybe some of those lower-end guys. Maybe
Is Desjardins a sophomore now?
I believe he's a redshirt junior, I believe, or but just a junior.
Was he the one that scored that winning bucket against Oregon? It was bouncing off the backboard, and he happened to be in the right place at the right time.
No, that was the freshman kid, the athletic kid.
Okay, that's
Devonair.
Devonair.
That's who I was trying to think of. Thanks for helping me out.
Yeah, Jake Desjardins was a walk-on that they just had an extra scholarship last year because of how everything shook out with, you know, the recruits that they were expecting to come on board ended up not everybody came on board. So they had an extra scholarship. So they gave it to him because he was a walk-on and one of their taller guys. So it kind of worked out. But the assumption is that will be pulled now and they'll have to use that somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny it's more ironic funny, that Sean has to deal with this every year because of how he recruits, going after the great players, knowing that they're going to be here a year at the most two and kind of have to rebuild. I talked to him about this maybe 6-7 years ago when he had to feed the beast and continue to feed the beast. And recruiting isn't easy. It's something he didn't have to deal with at Xavier.
No, it's a different kind of challenge, and it's one of those, oh yeah, every coach would love to have that problem where, sure, you know, you're having to, oh man, you get five stars every year, poor you.
Yeah.
But it's a different kind of problem because a lot of these guys come with egos, and I think that's been part of the challenge for Sean Miller over the last couple years, you know, a few years, where yes, you're getting five stars, but they also come with, you know, five-star egos and trying to find the right fit in terms of personality. I think, to me, outside of that one team that was very, very close, I believe it was, you know, 2014, 2013,
Aaron Gordon, yeah.
It's been trying to figure out, okay, what's the right combination of guys, both personality-wise and talent-wise, and, you know, leadership and veterans and all that.
Yeah.
We've seen how things work out in the NCAA tournament. Usually it's the older teams. You look at this year, they had a lot of older guys on that team. And so for Arizona, for Sean Miller, it's, yes, he can go out and get you. You know, I'm sure if he wanted to, he can go get 6-5 stars every year. But that's not necessarily what he wants to do, and I don't think it's Kentucky's shown. That's not how you win championships.
Right, right. In fact, Kentucky is probably the worst model because everyone talks about Calipari, how great of a coach he is, and he may be, but his style of how he does things or goes about things is way overrated. He has some of the best classes every year, if not top five every year. What has he done with it? One national title in 10 years or 8 years or whatever it is, and ever since he has this magic. Well, he sure hasn't used it.
Well, and their goal is clear. He doesn't hide what their goal is about. Their goal is, we're going to get you the NBA. We want you out of here in 1 year.
Right.
Where Arizona is somewhere kind of in between that. And only Kentucky can really be Kentucky. Only they have the resources like they have and have that kind of feel about them that they're the only ones that can really do that. So you don't necessarily want to follow that model anyways, because as they've shown, it's not really leading the championships and it's difficult to do. So Arizona, it's somewhere in between.
Is this year's Arizona team going to have more depth, and is it going to be the depth that they need?
Good question. The one coming in for this next year?
Yes, sir.
More, I think they're going to be more talented, but it's young talent. Depth, that's a good question, because he doesn't go deep to the bench anyway. And depends how deep you're talking. Eight, maybe? Maybe. And they're all the same type of players. They're not big dudes. They're 6'6", 6'7" guys. You know, gazelles, but not big guys. Am I wrong?
At guards and forward, it looks like they're...
Sure. When was the last time teams like that won a title?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I was going.
Lacking at center. Not too much
Jeter,
there.
Jeter is what he is.
Jeter's basically it.
Yeah. And Ira Lee's a big man, but still, I mean, a foul-prone big man.
In the front court, you're going to be relying a lot on newcomers, whether that's Stone Gettings, who is a senior, who's coming over from Cornell, had a lot of success in the Ivy League. A different type of basketball, different mm-hmm. style of basketball.
Dylan Smith. And I say that Dylan Smith because guy who had a great resume coming in, and how'd that resume go? Not so good.
Yeah. And then Zeke Nagy, who's coming in as, you know, the star kind of freshman power forward, who's going to be able to stretch the floor, and he is kind of the size that you look for. He's going to have to add a little bit of weight. About 6'10", 6'11".
So he's a Jeter type. Not Jeter. He's the one who declared early in about 5 years ago. And then was a bust.
Grant Jarrett?
Jets.
No, he's a little bit different.
Similar stretch four. Yeah.
But I think he's a little bit different. I think he has a little bit more about his inside game that will work more.
This guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
What about Josh Green?
Josh Green's an interesting one. He's going to be, to me, where he's going to make his name, and it's probably where he's going to be looked at the most when it gets to being looked at by the NBA is as a defender. He has elite defender potential, and I think that's something that Sean Miller really liked about him and really saw with him, because he is going to shoot, and he has improved his shooting, but that's not what he's known for. He's known for being athletic, getting to the rim, his dunks, but really his defense. And I think that's where if he comes in and shines, it's going to be on the defensive end, which is just fine by Sean Miller.
Well, there's a lot of good pieces to the puzzle. However, it's a big puzzle, and it's going to be a heck of a year. And the asterisk is for me is that they're going to be young, and that's when you're kind of all bets are off for my end.
Yeah, I think young, but also new pieces where you have, you know, Max Hazard coming over.
Right.
You have Stone Gettings that you're going to have to try and fit in. You're trying to fit in all these new pieces, including a freshman class. It's just a lot of new pieces that you don't know how that's going to work until you start playing games.
Yeah, until we see them, we're not going to know defensively how this team is going to be.
Correct. And to your point, maybe a week or so ago, Tom, was the chemistry that's involved. And that's number one. If they don't like playing together, and if their playing time is whatever, and Sean's a guy, if you don't care, if you don't like it, that's just too bad. And who knows? Maybe one or two leaves. I don't know.
Yeah, I still think when you look at this team, what you're looking at is the kind of the closest combination to talent plus personality, ego, lack of ego, I should say, and just high character guys that you would really want, that I think Sean Miller knows he wants now and knows he's going to go after more, because we've already seen that with the next recruiting class. You can see the guys that they're really targeting. They're high character guys. They're guys that just don't, they're really low key. And that's when you look at this class, a lot of these guys are very low key guys. They don't really want to be in the spotlight too much, even though they're, you know, 5-star, 4-star guys. Nico's a little bit different. I think Nico enjoys being in the spotlight, and he kind of relishes in those moments. But even him, he's not a big ego guy. And so I think when you look at what Sean Miller tried to do with this roster, I think he was trying to find the perfect blend of talent and having, you know, elite talent, but also having guys that he could coach and would listen.
Hey, Matt, where do you think the leadership is going to come from? Who of these newcomers? It's probably going to be one of the newcomers, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it will have to fall on Chase Jeter once again, just because he's kind of that older guy and they trusted him in that position this last season. But I really look at someone like Max Hazard, who's been in the, and he just played in the NCAA tournament, which is, you can't say that about a lot of guys on Arizona's roster right now. And I think he's going to be someone who kind of steps into that role. He's already familiar because his brother played here as a walk-on for Arizona. So I think he understands what the expectations are going to be if he steps into that role. But I think he naturally just has that about his personality. So I think he would probably step in similar to Justin Coleman this last season as a point guard or as a guard. and kind of take over some of that leadership role for this team.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, Arizona, at the end of the last year, this last year, three months ago already, you saw that ESPN had them like really, really at the bottom, like 11 seed going into the bracketology, whatever it was. Now they're like a 3 or 4.
Yeah.
They moved them up.
I think people just don't really know what to make of this team.
Yeah, that plus they didn't know at that time what was going to happen to Sean, and it looks like Sean's going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be pretty surprising at this point if anything changed from where it's been, you know, the last however many months.
Sure. Now it's just waiting for the NCAA decisions, and I think that'll be whatever it is down the road.
Yeah.
Let's take a break here. That's a good conversation. Got us kind of quickly through this 20 minutes. Come back on the other side here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back. I'm Steve Rivera here on AM 1030 The Voice, and I'm talking with Go AZ Cats editor Matt Moreno, one of my partners at the Sports Guys show. Hey, let's go to football real quick. I don't know if we've talked since the spring game. We may have. And what did you make of that whole spring game? Don't fall asleep when you tell me this.
I know. I had to hold your head up because we were sitting in the stands, and I was like, oh, Steve, wake up.
God,
wake
I couldn't wait for it to end.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because the defense was so dominant. It's so hard to tell during the spring because we've been in this point before when we watch a spring game and go, oh, they're going to be pretty good. And then they're not good at all.
Right.
And, you know, you can only see them playing Arizona. And sometimes Arizona as a team just isn't very good. And so it's very hard to really, truly evaluate a team like that during the spring game. But I think there was some bright moments. I think Jalen Harris doing what he did was, you know, definitely he looked like a potential star on this team and someone they could really use in the defense. But to me, we didn't get to watch a ton. We got to watch, you know, about 30 minutes pretty much every day, but it was mostly stretching and it was no team stuff. But to me, the thing that stood out was Khalil Tate just looking like the most comfortable quarterback out there. And I don't know if that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for, you know, for him and for Arizona at that position, but behind him, it's just kind of a group of guys right now, and there needs to be some separation because you're going to bank on Khalil being healthy, which, you know, could very well happen, and if that does happen and he plays well, they're going to do pretty well this season. But if anything happens and he misses any time, it's kind of just a bunch of guys back there right now. No one's really separated themselves, and I think that's the thing that stood out to me was he looked the most comfortable, even in what limited time we got to watch him. He just looked the most comfortable taking the snaps and, you know, running the team.
I think comfortable is a great word because he looked comfortable, stable, more mature, said all the right things, wasn't cranky, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's soon to be said. It was April or May or whatever.
Yeah, they don't play games for a long time.
Right. But I did think that the quarterback from Texas, the big kid, He looked great.
He looks the part.
He looks the part. Yes. We won't know how good he'll be in another year or so or two. You know,
is that Gunnell you're talking about?
Yeah.
How do you say his name?
Gunnell.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Gunnell. Sorry.
No. Yeah, I wasn't sure which way, so it was Gunnell. But he looked the part, looked good when he played, but he's got some seasoning to do.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be a shock, I don't think, if he ends up eventually being, you know, the number two behind Khalil.
Right. Yeah.
By the time the season gets here, just because I think as of right now, that's kind of the future. I think you can see that he's going to be their guy eventually, is what it feels like. And they're going to, the offense is going to look different than what it does right now. And they're going to be able to, you know, do some different things. But yeah, to me, he looks the part. When I've watched him a couple different times, and I said, to me, that's the type of player who's going to get drafted based just on measurables.
Yeah.
And then it's about what else he can do from there and what he can prove between now and then. But to me, that's the way an NFL quarterback looks when they're in high school and as a freshman.
What do you think is going to happen to Joyner eventually?
I don't know. I mean, I still think he's important for this team because of how similar he is to Khalil Tate in a lot of ways, where if Khalil Tate does run into an injury and you don't, let's say Gunnell is your backup, do you feel comfortable having Gunnell running the same things that Khalil Tate's running, what you went into the season planning for Khalil Tate to run, or would you rather just have someone that's very similar in Jamari Joyner, kind of just drop him right in there and see what he can do?
Didn't that happen last year where they tried that?
Yeah, but he's a true freshman and he wasn't given a ton of opportunities and he was just kind of used in spot minutes here and there. And when times maybe it wasn't so easy to drop a freshman in there to perform. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I know everyone always talks about, you know, eventually he's going to be at a different position. But
right.
so far he's still at quarterback, and that's how it's moving forward right now.
So I know you don't have plans tonight. You want to stick for the second hour? I'm just asking you now because I want to kind of get into some topics
sure,
or not.
Sure.
You'll be able to?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll hold those topics in our free-flowing thing next week.
I'll have my secretary cancel all my meetings.
I'll be right on that, Coach. I'll be right on that. because, like I said, I owe Tom kind of an apology, not apology. I'll go there right now. I said that Portland would win last night, just out of the blue because I had the pick, and you were kind of going back and forth. You were playing devil's advocate, actually.
You don't owe me anything.
No, that's
you
why I'm
just
not,
expressing your opinion.
That's why I'm not going to apologize.
I know. I was about to say, Steve, paying someone an apology.
That'd be it's going to be about 65 tonight if that happens. But you don't understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, you weren't really saying they were going to win. You were sort of saying it's kind of thinking you're feeling like they could win and they probably would. It just seemed like that was the way the Hollywood script was being
Correct.
Written, you know?
Correct, yeah. And typically, when you're up 3-0, the team with the three kind of lets back a little. And to the point was, yesterday, 17 points ahead, 15 points ahead, 17 points ahead, and they still couldn't close the deal. It's just a team that can't close a deal against a good team, and they didn't. So it was what it was. Mea culpa, Tom. You better write this stuff down.
No problem.
On May 21st, Steve Rivera did a mea culpa.
You don't need to do that. You do not need to prostrate yourself with your arms out at your sides.
Could you look at
No.
Google that word. Google that word. What the hell does that mean? So back to the action. How long have you been covering the softball team this year? Have you seen more than a few games?
Yeah. I mean, the second half
there,
of the season was
yeah,
more.
Yeah, you've been there more
yeah,
consistently.
Once spring football ended, I really
What's the most intriguing thing you see or have seen?
The offense.
It's kind of fun to watch.
It's fun to watch. Yeah. And when it's really rolling, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, it's what every fan, I think, wants to see, where it just, especially this day yeah. and age. And it's kind of, as someone who kind of, you know, watched Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa hit home runs during, you know, those
yeah,
years.
Yeah. The Bash Brothers.
Yeah, we kind of know why now. But right. for that type of game, I mean, everyone loved baseball at that time. It was, you had to be glued to the TV. And to me, it's kind of a similar feeling because they just hit so many home runs.
Yeah.
And there's just so much power and they're just always hitting. And so it's been strange, especially early last weekend in the regional when they weren't hitting home runs and they right. were trying. It's a different type of game. And it's one I'm sure, you know, Coach Candrea really likes because, you know, every coach likes to press different buttons and figure out different ways to beat teams. And, but it's fun to watch home runs. And so I think just watching the offense and how they can score and how easily they can flip a switch it's been impressive.
Right, right. And she's not a home run hitter, but
no,
she hits home runs.
No, she will tell you she's not a home run hitter. And she was asked a couple times on Sunday, do you still think you're not a home run hitter? And she said, no, I just try and do what I can.
And she's leading the NCAA softball standings in home runs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
good for her.
Yeah, sometimes that's the right mentality to take. Is I'm not going to go up there trying to hit home runs, and it just happens. And
right,
but yeah, it's really been fun to watch their offense and see what they can do at the plate.
So me, when I get up every morning, I'm not going to go out there and be good looking. So you know, hey, it just happens.
Who is that guy in the mirror there?
I need a new mirror. That's what it is. but no, it's fun, and it looks like it's a good group. You know, half the time, and we've seen them, and I'll ask you guys later in this hour that they enjoy playing together. It's a good group. They know the task at hand. I hate that phrase right there, but everyone has a role and they play it well.
Yeah, and well, it's funny when you listen to, especially these last few weeks when Kendra talks and he says certain things. He speaks from experience. He's done this a long time. And when he says, oh, I've never seen that, because, you know, Reyna Carranco just
right.
came back
mm-hmm.
from her hand injury. She received a standing ovation before she took her first at bat. And after the game, Candrea said, I'd never seen that before. And there's just been moments like that where, you
right.
know, I don't think he's just, you know, blowing smoke. Like, I think he's really, really, truly means it. And he's been around. So it's interesting to see how much the fan base has continued to be energized by this team. And I think, to your point, it's because it feels like the team is so relatable and so enjoyable to watch, and like they're having a lot of fun themselves.
Right, right. No, and winning helps
yeah.
to a lot of this. And I think that you were there for the Washington series.
Yeah.
What was it like there? Because they were being dominated by a better team.
Yeah, I mean,
dominated may not be the right word, but they were being beat.
Yeah, when you look at the score, it was, well, what's going on with this team? And it was kind of a similar situation where they weren't hitting those home runs like they usually do, and they just really couldn't generate any offense, and it was something he continued to bring up that entire weekend, was they just weren't delivering the big moments. And that's kind of change. They did that at UCLA. They got in those same similar moments that they were in against Washington, and they just delivered. And they, look how much it changed. And now they're on a roll, and, you know, one more series, and they're to the World Series again. So,
isn't it funny? And this is what I think about sports, because you learn from defeat easier than you do with wins. And they did this against Florida State. They lost 2 of 3, but they won one game. They knew they were capable of being that good, and then they went on 21 straight or whatever it was, and then they got beat by Washington, I think it was.
They got beat by Cal, the worst team in the conference.
Cal, right, in that stretch. And they came back and they lost to Washington. But those things taught them how to be better, or whatever the word is.
Well, and it really didn't hurt their standing very much in terms of, you know, being seeding. Able to host and all that stuff in the seeding. And so maybe when you look back on it, and let's say they end up eventually winning the national title, you can look back on that Washington series and say that was necessary for them to get to this point.
Mm-hmm. No. It happens all the time. I saw it when Arizona won the 1997 world title, when they won the NCAA title. They went to the Bay Area, got beat by Stanford and Cal. They played well enough to win the games. They did not, but it was a good Stanford, a good Cal team, and they just found it within themselves to get better in the next 3 weeks. They had this magical run, and they won the title.
Yeah, if you can find a way to not be completely beat down by that mentally, right, where it just takes you out of your game entirely, and you can understand what it is and what you need to get better at, it can be a great kind of jumping off point. I think that's really what it's turned into for this team.
Right, more psychology than it is ability.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question. That hasn't happened much with Sean's teams, where they kind of go somewhere. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's like Bermuda. The first time they didn't learn anything, they didn't care to learn anything. It was him being frustrated with the team, and they just kind of fizzled out. Last year, there was no hope of anything because they just didn't learn enough, and they weren't good enough at the end of the day. You still have to be good. Still have to be good to learn all these lessons. But even in the past, and they didn't have a chance when they lost to Wisconsin back-to-back years. I mean, you're done. There's no lessons to be learned because you're done.
Yeah.
And there was really no team in the season. Maybe when they lost to Cal, when Brandon Ashley got hurt, and they had to kind of regroup and kind of find ways to, you know, fill in the holes and all that, they became maybe not better, but just as good.
I still think part of that has to do with kind of something we were talking about earlier. You have guys that know they're going to be going on to something else that's better. That's what their true goal is.
Yes.
And
where are you going with this?
In softball, this is the pinnacle for a lot of these players. And this is what they're working for. This is what they've been working for years for, their entire lives.
Right.
And for basketball, winning a national title would be great. But hey, I know I'm going to be a first-round pick next year, so what does it matter? This summer I'm going to be a first-round pick. So, yeah, I'm bummed right now, but...
Isn't that the theme or the book title of the 2018 season?
Yeah.
In all due respect?
Yeah.
Because going into that locker room after that loss, did anybody give a crap?
It was so much different with that 2013 team, whatever team that was, the Aaron Gordon
team.
When
they got beat,
the Aaron Gordon. I think that had the right personalities, the right mentality. And those guys, and so it just comes down, again, it's picking. You have to first recruit the right types of guys, the guys that fit your system, but they also have to have the right mindset. And it's so hard to make all that kind of click in the same year. It's hard to win national titles. And, you know, I think it's so hard to do that. And the way they put the teams together is, you know, sometimes it's just a crapshoot. And you know, that 2018 team definitely had some different elements to it that where I think, even if you don't want to think that way, but deep down you know, hey, I'm probably going to be a first-round draft pick, it has to creep into your mind. These kids, they're, you know, 20-year-old kids.
Even if that first-round draft pick is not part of the problem, there's other pieces to that problem.
Yeah.
You know. And I won't mention names. We all know.
Steve, do you want to remind our listeners if they want to join in the conversation?
Oh, yes, sure, please do. Yes, I will. 790-2040, please call in if you'd like. We're going to be talking more about sports related to this in a free-flowing type of thing after we talk to Taylor McClellan at the 605 number, because we have Coach Glenn Posey calling in about 5:40. So let's take that break, but thanks. I need to do that more often. I'm reminded of that all the time. So 790-2040 is the call-in show. You know, also, maybe while we take a break, we have two more tickets to get away for the Sugar Skulls, correct? Yes, we get.
I believe we do, yes.
Yeah, we had two yesterday given away. Let's do that now if you want to call.
And they're taking on the Rattlers.
Yes, a big game. 790-2040. If you want the last two tickets we have available, please call in now, and we'll take a break while you do this at 10:30. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye in the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm with Matt Modeno of Go Easy Cats. I'm Steve Rivera, your host, and we're just kind of talking a lot of different things. We're going to probably try to get a hold of Glenn Posey here in the next minute or so. If he's not listening, we're trying to reach him. And that softball team, golf team, a baseball team. Oh, yeah, you went to baseball today. I was trying to get to baseball, could not. They're on a nice little run here. I don't know if it's going to be good enough to get them into the tournament, but who knows?
That's the big question, and it's funny because they're going to Washington State, one of the worst teams in the Pac-12, maybe the worst team in the Pac-12, I actually think. And, you know, if they win all three, they have a shot. They should win all three. But if they lose one of them, it's over. I mean, that's kind of the reality right now, is that they can just probably, if they lose the first game, they have no shot at, you know, making the tournament. But if they win all three, they're going to have a shot, and they're going to at least have a chance to watch the show and see if their name gets called.
What are they streak-wise? 14 or 16 is my...
I'd have to double check. I know they've only lost one game in May, and that was kind of the challenge that Jay Johnson set out to his team that first series when they played Oregon to start May. He said he wanted to go undefeated in May, and that was kind of the goal. And they've only lost one game so far, and in the month of May, and swept every other series. They only lost to ASU, and it was Jay Johnson continues to come back to. It was a single play that happened. Just couldn't convert with a pitcher trying to cover first, and that kind of changed the game and ASU ended up winning. And that's why he feels like, this team is, outside of that, he feels pretty good about his team and where it's at. And he said today, even if they don't get to play next week and this just bleeds into 2020, he's happy that this was able to happen and that they were able to finish out pretty strong, because it at least sets them up for some good things going into next season, even if they don't, make the postseason.
What's been the biggest difference, and I'll throw one thing at you after this, what's been the biggest difference they're doing now that they didn't do before?
Pitching. I mean, and it hasn't been a secret, and he mentioned that last week when we talked to him after the last game of their series against Sam Houston State. He mentioned that there's no secret. You can't hide what the issue has been. It's been pitching. It's been starting pitching. They just haven't had consistent enough starting pitching for most of the season. And because their offense is, like softball, one of the top offenses in the country. And you have a lot of guys at a lot of the top of the individual list. You have Arizona, at the top of a lot of the team lists in the NCAA. And so their offense isn't the issue. They're scoring a lot of runs, and they've lost games where it's been 15-13. And if you score 13 runs, you expect to win that game.
Sure.
And so that's kind of been the issue for them. But recently, I don't know, there's really nothing that says this is why they're doing better, why the pitchers are, doing better, but they've been improved, and they've all three starters went at least six innings over the weekend at Penn State, and that really made a difference for them and really changed things for them, and they're kind of in the right mindset right now.
Doesn't the team you play have something to do with it?
And that's the thing that was kind of in the back of my mind, and I think it's something that's probably going to go unsaid by a lot of players, because they're going to want to talk about, no, we're just winning games, and that's what's important. But, the teams that they've been haven't been very good.
Well, look at Arizona basketball. Just this year, for example, they play what they were playing at the beginning of the year, soft schedule, bad schedule, did very well, and everyone was saying, oh, they're going to be better than what everyone thought. Then they start the season in the Pac-12 very well. Well, they play Cal and Stanford, and they play, I don't know, whoever else early, and they're doing really well. And then they play to the heart of the matter of the conference and fizzle. Well, those teams they played were horrible. In reality, they were not very good. They beat bad teams.
Right.
And they had a big record that was kind of like a false hope.
Yeah, but I think your goals change as you go through a season, and right now their goal is to make the postseason. And
oh, sure.
In those terms, it doesn't matter who they're playing. They're continuing to move up in the RPI, and as long as that number moves up, they're going to be fine, and they'll have a chance, which is all that matters.
I get that, but if I'm beating – well, I won't continue. But you understand what I'm
no,
saying.
No, I know.
It's who you play.
Right.
It's funny. I talked to Coach Marcus Coleman yesterday about the Sugar Schools, and I said they're on a three-game streak. They had just lost four before that, but they beat San Diego twice, and they beat Bismarck, I think it was, over the weekend. Teams that have won three games total. Not to be mean, but it's the truth. You're beating teams that are not very good. And now you have to face the gauntlet of your schedule again. And what happened? Well, we played a pretty good team. The other team matters. And I say this in the show a number of times. We just have to worry about what we do. No, no, no. You have to worry about what the other team does too. Or if we just do what we do, well, there's another team over there that's trying to prevent that.
They're also saying the same things.
They're also saying the same things. Exactly. It doesn't work that way. Sports isn't, unless you're playing tennis, individual tennis.
Yeah. No, I get it. But I think it comes back to your goals change. And, you know, if you would ask Jay Johnson, would barely, you know, would being on the bubble for the NCAA tournament satisfy you, you know, on the first day of the season, he would just laugh at you and say no. But at this point in the year, it would. I think it would give them a lot of positivity and confidence heading into the offseason if they're able to get into the postseason.
Has his personality changed much? He's still a pretty good dude.
Yeah. Yeah,
pretty straightforward, honest.
Straightforward, and he'll give you the answers that you're seeking.
Yeah.
And he won't really dance around. He knows if you try and word a question and say, oh, you know, I'm going to try and get him to think, kind of understand what I'm saying. No, he'll know what you mean. He'll know what's underneath all that kind not really fluff, but just kind of what you're dressing up the question as. He knows what you're getting at. And so that's good when a coach knows that and understands and responds appropriately and answers your questions. So.
Yeah, yeah. So now that we're waiting for Glenn, I don't know if we're going to get him or not, but so we have a variety of ages in the room or two rooms here. Tom, what was the best team you ever saw play?
Any team?
At
any level?
Yeah, 1945 Mets, whatever.
The best team.
The best team.
Probably one of the Steeler teams of the 70s.
Oh, yeah, they were good. Bradshaw quarterback.
Yeah.
Bradshaw quarterback and Franco Harris running back. Len Swan.
The Steel Curtain.
76, 75?
Defense, yeah.
I only remember the...
One of the Super Bowl teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Had to be.
I think it was like 75, 76. One was Swan diving for that ball, acrobatic type of thing at the 50-yard line.
Yeah. One impossible catch, but he made it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that good pick. What about you? I was going to call you Morales. Whatever.
One of those.
All look the same.
First three letters. I'm thinking the 72 and 10 Bulls.
Chicago Bulls. What year is that?
96.
96. Okay, yeah. So they won their first title then. Because I was there for the 97 year, and I covered Sean and those guys when they were, not Sean, Steve, when he was on the Bulls then. Yeah,
that whole era. I mean, those teams, it's very reminiscent of kind of what we're dealing with right now with the Warriors and just how dominant they are. And
who's the best team you covered?
Ooh. I'd probably go back to the team I've been talking about, that 2013 Arizona team.
Oh, yeah, that's when they lost to Wisconsin.
The first
Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah. The one that the Brandon Ashley year when they probably should have won a national title. I mean, that was going to be their year, I thought. And to me, top to bottom, that was just the team that you said that's the team that's going to get it done.
And at the end of the day, they were pretty good guys. As far as we could know and get close to them, because they had Gordon Ashley.
I think the thing that stuck out to me about that team, and maybe, and I know you don't get with every team, and we've talked about 2018, passion. I think, to a man, every one of those players had a ton of passion for that team, for their coaches, for each other, for the fan base. I think they enjoyed being at Arizona. And I just think that team had a lot of passion, and I think that really, you saw that as they played, and that's why they were so devastated, I think, when that loss happened.
Right. Nick Johnson, those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good. A lot of, though, passion is a good word. You can't fake that.
No.
You can't fake that. They liked each other, played well together, and it was devastating when they lost. You knew that there was some big deal here. We got him on the phone. Coach Glenn Posey, how are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you doing, sir?
Fine, thank you. Just wanted to touch base with you. Did you see the daddy ball thing that I posted?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes, I did.
It comes on the heels of something you posted about being a Division I athlete. And you're younger than me. You're fairly young, a former player. What's going on with today's players? Because you're coaching them now.
Yes, sir. I'm back at it. We're back on the grind. Some kids like the recruiting process more than they like the work process. And that's probably the biggest reality I've seen is that Instead of accepting the grind and the responsibility of grades and all that, they like the flash and the, you know, look at me, and they want to talk about the 7-on-7 teams and the gear that they wear as opposed to how hard I'm working and my GPA.
What do you do to combat that? Or maybe you don't have to as a coach, but maybe you do. But you see it from other teams as well, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. You know, my answer is I have a size 13 shoe and I use it. but these kids are, you know, they're accepting the harsh reality of, you know, Coach Posey, who says that's not good enough. Grades aren't good enough. You got to stop living in la la land. We got to go to work harder. And when you do your job, that's what you're supposed to do.
Right. No. It's funny. And this is not an endorsement of anything, just me being stupid in my statement. I know that it's graduation season, and I was guilty of this as well. Everybody's proud of their kid because they went to school and they got a degree. They got their graduation. They graduated. And this is me being stupid, and I apologize now to whoever's offended. They're all happy. But guess what? Isn't that what we're supposed to do?
Absolutely. Steve, I agree with you 100%. Doing your job is... If this is the highlight of your life, I think you're in trouble.
Right, right.
You know, my first year of teaching was probably the biggest reality check of my life because I'm teaching at a middle school my first year.
God help you. God help you.
Yeah, people are getting limos for their kids for graduating from eighth grade. And I said, are you kidding me? You know, these kids need to earn stuff. They got to do well. You know, just... graduating from eighth grade is no big accomplishment in my sense of reality. You know, when you graduate from college, okay, good job.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But that's, you know, I don't know what our parents are doing or thinking, but that's been a reality for the last 15, 20 years is that we celebrate little stuff way too much and we don't expect more of our kids, you know. My grandfather, he told the only accomplishment, you know, I thought I did pretty good in high school, played some college football. My grandfather said, just don't embarrass the name.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That was it. You know what I mean? There was no, hey, good job and all that stuff. It was, hey, that's what you're supposed to do. Just don't embarrass us.
Right. That pass you caught, good catch. But, hey, we have garbage to be thrown later?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, as a football coach now, it's like doing your job to me is that's what you're supposed to do. And I'm not going to, you know, tell you great job or anything or pat you on the back. And that's what we expect of you. And
right.
If you think I'm going to acknowledge every little movement that you made on that football field, you got a sad reality in front of you because football's rough.
Yeah, yeah.
And the opponents we're going to go against are highly qualified dudes that do their job at a high level. They're going to try to, you know, knock you in the teeth. So you better strap it up just because you did one good play. I'm not too impressed.
Right. No, yesterday's, or you posted this a few days ago, and then I saw the daddy ball thing. But here's the list of it. Don't have D's and F's on report cards. Don't miss summer workouts. Don't finish last in conditioning drills. Don't fake injuries to avoid conditioning. Don't run from competition. Don't cry about being coached hard. And don't you don't have to be motivated. And that's a list for real D1 athletes. They overcome these things.
Well, they could have embraced those things.
Yes.
And you know, like coaching a team in the last 3 years was another eye opener for me. You know, in the learning process, it's, you know, old dogs can learn new tricks. You know, I'm 50, and coaching there was a great experience for me. I was surrounded by some pretty good coaches and some really good coaches and some kids that were amazing and some kids that were not so amazing. Guys that had superstar talent but didn't have the work ethic, and then we had guys that had no talent but a ton of work ethic, and I'll take those guys all day long because that's how we made a living at Sunnyside for all those years. We didn't have the right size, speed, combinations, but our kids were good work habits, weight room habits, school habits, going to accomplish great things, but, you know, they couldn't meet the D1 criteria. And the big thing is, when you have kids that are willing to work, you can win in football.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you have a ton of talent and kids aren't willing to work, you're going to get your butt kicked.
Yeah.
So I much prefer the soldiers.
I'm sure that's one of your messages every day in practice at 7-on-7 or whatever, every summer and every spring and every winter. When you go against teams that you say, okay, we may not have the talent to beat them, but they're not going to outwork us.
That's been our philosophy for, you know, Coach Sanchez did a great job laying a foundation of work ethic and expectations. You work your tail off to meet those expectations, and when you do, you did your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so our kids over the years responded to that very well. And, like, the culture of kids right now, they're not responding very well to that. I am frustrated, but I know that at the end of the day, the kids are going to come around to the culture more than I'm going to come around to them. I'm an old dog. I'm not changing our ways. This is the recipe to win.
Right. You'll be back for another day. They may not be, but you'll be back.
I told the seniors, I said, you know what? You got one senior season to win. I'm going to have 10 more.
Right.
So
right.
If you guys don't figure out, I think in one of my 10 chances, I like my chances. But you guys got one. So figure it out right now and get on board and get to it and get working, or you guys are going to be living regret. Whereas if I do a good enough job in the next 10 years and I win one time, then I still hit the jackpot. Mm-hmm. And that with that group of seniors. And so the good thing is my guys are really responding to the work ethic. When I got there 15 weeks ago, we had 5 guys in the 1,000-pound club after the first max out. 6 weeks later, we maxed out again. I have 20 guys in the 1,000-pound club. And that just tells me we're on the right path.
Yeah.
And we went against our old guys on Friday in our spring game, and hallelujah, we somehow found a way to beat an All-State quarterback, an All-State linebacker, All-State receivers, All-City wideouts, All-City DBs, and somehow the 2019 Blue Devils were able to beat some old guys that were pretty talented and played some college football. So we felt really good about that's what we expect to do, is to beat those teams.
Right, right. We got about 15 seconds left. I want to say, if you have 100 kids and then you have about that on a roster or maybe half that or whatever, I don't have much time for this. How many of them would come back to you and say, hey, thanks for coaching me up or thanks for being tough on me?
Every single one. As soon as they have their kids, then they have the aha moment and they come back and say, I get it now.
Very much so. That's called fatherhood. That's exactly right. Hey, Glenn, we got to do this again in the summer. When it gets dull, we can talk long about this subject.
Anytime, Steve. I appreciate
Great.
You, sir.
Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. Let's take a break here on 1030 The Voice, Trusted Local News and Talk.